Alrighty, everyone. Welcome back to On the Gravel with your hosts, Raven and Oliver at Aletheia Media Network.
Happy race week.
Happy race week, everyone. It's been a long off season, but we finally made it to less than a week till lights go out and we can hear Brundle's sweet, sweet voice again.
We've got a lot of on-track action, and I can't believe I finally get to say it, but there's a lot to be excited about, a lot to discuss.
First thing out of the bat we're going to get to is some Red Bull drama with Christian Horner. There was a lot of rumors going on the last week about him stepping down by the end of the week, which seems to be completely false. Investigation is still ongoing, so we will wait to talk more and more on that until we get all the details. But from what I'm reading, Oliver, it's not good.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of that's going to be taken care of behind closed doors. We won't really hear anything until it's fully settled.
I think it's going to be out of court settlement of some undisclosed.
I feel like that's
how
it always is in F1. It's always bribery and all that kind of stuff.
Apparently, it's said that he already offered like $650,000 to $750,000.
Red Bull or Christian Horner?
Christian Horner to the lady that is pursuing legal action, and she denied it. And I believe she's on break too, trying to get the legal action stuff figured out. But
yeah,
moving on.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, you can, even in Drive to Survive, I feel like he's trying to be very, very,
he's a character,
polite,
man.
But moving on,
he's a double-edged sword.
He really is. But let's get to some stuff that actually happened on track at preseason this week. Oliver, drain covers. When are we going to learn?
Dude, we were talking about this like 2 days ago. Like every single time I've tuned into preseason testing, there was 27 hours of preseason testing. I probably watched a good 9 or 10 hours of it live, and a good half of that was taken up by red flags specifically for drain covers coming up. And, you know, drain cover issues, those are always a big thing with like new tracks, that kind of stuff. But at a circuit that's hosting its 20-year anniversary race this year, that's not something that should be happening multiple times. I know it happened with Charles Leclerc, and there was one other instance on another day with another driver. I can't remember off the top of my head. I didn't see that one live. But it's not like these cars changed so much over the winter to where they should just be ripping drain covers up left, right, and center. But I think you really need to work on how these are actually cemented and welded into the ground.
I mean, that's a huge part of it. I feel like, yeah, like what you were saying, where new tracks, we can kind of give you the benefit of the doubt with this just being one of those kinks you're wrinkling out. But like a track with 20 years, that's almost as old as both of us.
Yeah, it's
things shouldn't
kind
be
of
happening.
A joke. But, you know, it probably has to do with how the floors of these cars are circulating air and pulling air in. But yeah, it's something that'll get ironed out. You know, you're having way more laps being done on this track since it's testing, so maybe that's what it is. You know, there's a lot smaller of a chance of this happening during an actual race, but it's something they'll iron out this week. I'm not expecting it to happen again, but yeah, definitely very weird to see that happen a few times. But what are a couple things you saw when you got to catch some testing moments?
Yeah, I only got to watch maybe 2 hours of testing, sadly, just because I've been really busy. But a few things that caught my eye are Checo's front left brake catching fire, giving him a slight delay. I think that was on day two.
Mm-hmm.
The mirror incident with Ricardo's response time and Nico's lack thereof. Nico's age, I feel like, is slowly starting to show in moments like that.
Yeah.
Alpine rocking a little bit more blue on the nose, just a little bit more color. Too bad that probably put them 15 kilograms overweight and that your car's complete dog shit. But yeah. Ferrari had some infrared cameras on the car aimed at the tires to get better understanding of tire degradation, which I thought was a really, really cool way of attempting to, especially for a team that struggled with it so much last year, for them to really get that figured out, I think is really, really cool in a really, really cool way.
Yeah, I saw those infrared cameras. They used to have like early 2010s. I think it was on the Sauber. Like, I remember a lot of clips. The one I'm remembering off the top of my head is Monza. They had an infrared camera like on the engine cover. It's a really cool YouTube video that I found, like going into the chicane at the first turn at Monza, just to see how quickly the tire temperature changes in those cars. I don't think they do it anymore, or at least give us the ability to see those anymore. But I'm thinking that's what, you know, that's what we're looking at with Ferrari. So to actually be able to see that would be really cool. Obviously, it's behind closed doors because it's testing. But yeah, definitely something that's really cool.
And then something that I saw that me and you kind of talked off air, but still wanted to kind of explain for the audience, aero rakes, those metal grids that were on the cars this weekend. What are they and what do they do, Oliver?
Yeah, so for anybody who doesn't know what an aero rake is, you're typically only going to see those in testing. You know, sometimes they make appearances on track during practice sessions, but this is a case where you have much, much more time on track to do stuff like that. But the aero rakes are essentially these metal structures that they put like right in front of the drivers behind the front tires. And they have a bunch of probes that measure airflow and energy throughout the lap. So it'll have like 100 sensors on there that are going to show exactly where the air is coming in and where it's flowing. And it just gives them a lot of data that they can use to say, you know, like where all the air is going on the parts of the car, how it affects, you know, the movement, the stability, all that kind of stuff. And there's another thing that you probably saw a lot of, which is the paint that they put on the cars
I have that at a later point, but I'll get into that. The yellow AirViz spray that they put on this testing period, I remember seeing it, them like showing them painting it on the McLaren, and saw the Mercedes had some on there too. But from my understanding, it's just a really light liquid that moves with the air so the teams can get a better understanding of the air patterns going over the car, which I think is pretty cool. I think it's just one of those, like, I don't want to say like old-fashioned methods.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a more analog-driven style of testing.
I was going to say, your aero rakes are definitely more
digital.
Digital? Yeah, your
Previz paint.
Previz, I think it's like Flowviz. I can't remember exactly what it's called.
I think it is Flowviz.
Yeah, that's more of your visual. That's something that, you know, you as a fan can take a look at next time you see it, because they will use it during the season as well.
Probably like
if you see that paint practice on the car again, that is what it is. It is so that they can check airflow on the car and see where it's all going. So if you see that again, that's what that is. But it's really cool just to see how that, you know, that paint, you know, they'll put it on in those specific places, and then it'll flow.
Unless like you're in the name, McLaren, okay, where they just sprayed that everywhere on the car.
Yeah, you'll see it flow across the cars as they do their laps.
I think it's pretty cool though. Do you want to get into the segment?
I think we should. I think we should go into it right now.
Let's go for it. Another week of top five or not five.
Oh yeah, we're doing this again.
This time we are going to be doing it more so as a collective, because there's a lot of nuances that go into this. But just preseason predictions, Oliver. Let's have you start it off.
Preseason predictions. I thought we would go for four very general categories that we can look back on at the end of the season. We'll talk about these at the end of the season. Those being the top three drivers in the championship, our biggest surprise drivers, depending on who you are, biggest flop, and our craziest prediction. So for myself, my top three drivers this year, I have Max Verstappen winning the world championship. I know, crazy take. Come back when I'm right. Give me my pat on the back. I have Charles Leclerc giving him a pretty good fight, finishing in second place. and I have Lando Norris taking the reins for McLaren, solidifying his place as the number one driver at that team and finishing third in the world championship.
Wow. I'm still pretty up in the air about mine, but I can definitely say Max Verstappen winning the world championship, I think.
Come again.
Bruh. I think one of the Mercedes guys will probably come in second. I'm feeling Lewis really needs to kind of push this year.
Just little a Lewis send-off.
Little Lewis send-off. Hopefully he can maybe secure a win in there just for one old time's sake type thing. That would be pretty cool. And then third, I actually really like the Lando pick, so I'm going to copy you there. But
I think the Lando Norris hype train is going to be real this season, coming off the back of a super good year last year.
Yeah, they looked amazing at the end of last year, so makes sense. But next segment, let's go.
Into my biggest surprise of the year. I picked two drivers for this because I genuinely could not pick between the two of them. I have Logan Sargeant for Williams and Charles Leclerc. Now, I said Logan Sargeant because he had such an abysmal rookie year last year that I think the only way he can really go is up. I think a lot of people are doubting him going into this season, hinted by his spin in preseason testing. We caught him on the gravel already. He did hit a bump, but you know there is some driver error in that as well. But I think he's going to turn some eyes. I think you know he can only go up. And I'm very impressed to see how he does this year. He'll have more points finishes. He's one to watch. I think he'll outscore some people in the driver standings, not finish 21st in a 20-car championship this year. And then my number two in the driver's standings, Charles Leclerc. I think the Ferrari is going to be a lot better than it was last year. And you saw that in 2022. The person who took the fight to Max Verstappen was Charles Leclerc. When Charles has a car that he's comfortable with and a car that's good, he will perform. I think Max Verstappen's biggest threat this year will not be his teammate. It will be Charles Leclerc. Even if that Red Bull is better and further ahead than it was last year, I think Charles is going to really... I think it'll play into the hype around Sergio Perez losing... I don't want to say hype, but... the notion that Sergio Perez is going to lose his seat just with how well Charles Leclerc is performing. But expect Charles to give Max a bit of a fight. Don't think Max is going to win the championship by like 300 points this year like he did last year.
I think that's a really good point.
I'm saying within 125. Charles Leclerc keeps it within 125.
Okay. I think I like those. I don't really know how I'm picking this right now. I think Fernando might have to do something this year to really kind of secure his spot, which kind of sounds weird.
Hey, he's fighting for a potential Mercedes seat.
Yeah, and so I think he's going to have a lot of eyes on him, and I also don't think Aston Martin are going to want to let him go, personally, just because...
Fernando is such a good pick for biggest surprise.
I think... especially with how they started last year and how he was feeling, I can see it that he wants that win, one more win so bad. So I think he might get that this year.
I mean, Fernando was fighting the fall off of the Aston Martin all year. And I think like my big point for that was like him taking that podium at Zandvoort last year. You know, the car had already fallen off at that point, and that was like a very...
that was him fighting
crazy
the car.
Race. Very skill-based track. You need to know where you are, know what to do. Those are really tough corners, all that banking, all the rain that there was. And he showed out to why he is still one of the best drivers on the grid. So expect more of that this year. The car is not going to come out the gate this year as good as it was last year, but Fernando will still be fighting high. So I completely agree with you on that. Biggest flop. Now, I went with somebody who I kind of forgot existed last year. That being Guan Yu Zhou. I don't think Guan Yu Zhou is going to have an impressive season whatsoever. Do I think he's going to be horrible? No. I just don't think he's going to exist like he did last year. He had no notable moments last year besides his really good qualifying, in Hungary when he qualified P5. That was his one like standout moment, and I don't expect him to have any of those this year. The state car looks like garbage, both visually and on track. Sorry, I had to get that in there. And I really only see Valtteri extracting the best out of that car. I think Joe is going to be out of the sport next year.
I think that's a valid take. I think there's a lot of young guys, you know, there's that, Antonelli, I want to say his name is, the young kid mm-hmm. in Mercedes. You got a lot of young guys coming up that definitely are going to be looking to take some of the older guys' seats.
I mean, you got Théo Pourchaire, who just won the F2 championship last year, who is a Sauber Academy driver who wants that seat.
It's going to be interesting.
Joe has a lot of pressure on him.
I think, what are we doing? Which one are we doing? We're doing biggest flop. Biggest flop, I think, is honestly going to be the Haas guys this year. I don't know.
That would have been my second pick. My second pick would have been Kevin Magnussen.
I mean, I think this is the year to... I mean, I can't say this is the year to really make a move because the car is in no place to make moves. Like,
yeah.
But I don't know. Do you think these guys stay next year?
One
obviously,
of them.
One of them has to. I think they're both due at 2024 at the end of the season.
Expiration dates at the end of this year. But I know Haas is not going to make the same mistake that they made in 2020 recruiting two rookies because that was one of the most abysmal seasons in modern Formula One by a constructor. I think Kevin Magnussen is out at the end of the year, and I think somebody like Oliver Bearman comes in, takes his seat, gets the experience of somebody like Nico Hülkenberg, kind of runs with that. I think that's what Haas will do.
We'll see.
And last but not least, the craziest prediction of the year. I put two in here, one driver-related, one race-related prediction. My driver craziest prediction is I think Sergio Perez will be dropped by Red Bull in the middle of the season. It's a crazy take. I said it last year. It didn't happen. I think they were a bit too forgiving with Sergio Perez last year. But I expect him to continue his downward spiral this year.
If I may butt in, I do think he will lose his seat at a similar time that Nick lost his last year.
At that 10 to 12 races in Mark.
Yeah, right before or over summer break, I feel like, mm-hmm. is the time frame they're going to give him. But I don't know.
He didn't perform well against Max Verstappen last year. I don't see him doing it again.
Danny back.
You have
as
Liam
your
Lawson
reserve.
Waiting for a seat. You have Yuki Tsunoda, who's really trying to prove himself in the Red Bull family. And then you have Checo looking horrible last year. I think his time is very, very numbered. More than almost any driver on the grid, I believe.
All right, I have my two picks.
My second one, I'll do it really quick. I expect one double red flagged race this year. I think that's a very fair shout. It's happened.
Canada again?
I mean, Australia was the one time we had it last year.
That was your first race, yep.
The other one that was really notable that I love going back and watching was the Tuscan GP at Mugello in 2020 that had three red flags. Such a crazy fun race to watch. But those races are always crazy, and I definitely expect to see something like that again this year.
All right, Sergio Perez to Haas confirmed at the end of the year.
That is an insane take that I kind of really like. I actually really, really like that.
I put it together while you were spieling over there, but I think the other big... my big take is going to really be that we're going to see the Inter tires played into this year. I think
you mean the wets?
No. Oh, do they only use the Inters really?
Yeah, they didn't use the wets once last year.
I feel like because am I the only one that wants to see them race in the rain?
No. I think everybody wants to see them race in the rain.
I wanted to ask that before I start.
I feel like in the past couple years they've really moved towards not racing in heavy rain like they used to.
Well, I can understand that you don't want to have another Spa restart in, what, 88? 90?
Oh, yes.
So
early
like,
90s.
That makes sense, but if it's raining...
But you also don't want to have another 2021 Belgian GP where they just did two laps behind the safety car and then finished with that. That was horrible.
I'm just searching up when the last time wet tires were used.
Yeah, I they were technically used last year at the Dutch GP, but it was like a couple drivers chucked them on for a little bit.
Singapore 2017 and Brazil 2016 were the last time a full wet tire race, in quotation marks, was held.
Brazil 2016, I remember being, in my personal opinion, Max Verstappen's greatest race in F1. He only finished in third, but his overtaking display and control of the car
in the rain,
specifically, was some of the greatest racing I've ever seen. And then Singapore 2017, that was the year where you had the huge crash between Sebastian Vettel, Max Verstappen, Kimi Raikkonen, and Fernando Alonso at the start. Those were really crazy races, and you can see why F1 doesn't want stuff like that happening anymore, because, you know, you will get more chaos and crashes and that kind of stuff in a wet race. You know, the risk of that is higher, but, you know, those drivers are trained to race in that as they grow up and go through these junior ranks, so why strip them of that once they make it to the pinnacle of motorsport, you know? I think that's something we really need to go back to. I think the sport's becoming a bit soft to the rain. It's kind of disappointing. Like, we could have raced at Imola last year.
Shut up. Shut up. I'm doing a project right now on Italy and the Po River. And, bro, I don't think you understand that they didn't have rain like that for 70 years. Dude. And then got it all in 3 days. They got the last equivalent of like 4 years worth of rain in 3 days. There's no way they're racing in that.
Dude, just chuck them in some kayaks. And we're good.
You want to go straight to Mercedes in the loopholes?
Yes, sir. Because I think this is a very cool thing to talk about. I was looking at this a lot last week.
So FIA was / is still looking into the legality of the front wing of the Mercedes W15. Toto states Mercedes designers were working with the FIA to make sure that they weren't breaking the rules, but then why do we have an investigation going? I guess it's because teams just want to complain about something whenever they can.
Hey, teams always hate when other teams find loopholes in the regulations.
This is true.
This specific loophole, for anybody who has not seen it, it is a front wing related regulation to which the nose cone and the front wing end plate, the wing flaps between those two pieces of the car, must be continuous. So you'll typically have three or four front wing flaps on the car, and those must be one continuous piece of metal and carbon fiber throughout the entire system. What Mercedes has done is on their very top flap, they have essentially cut it in half, so it only goes halfway from the end plate to the nose, but they're is a very thin line of carbon fiber. It's essentially a string that runs from that second half over to the nose and keeps it, in quotations, as a one continuous piece of metal.
It's pretty crazy, man.
It's pretty crazy. And it's really smart if it works. But it's fully legal. Yeah. You have to think. It is fully legal.
I feel like that was the only major loophole or issue about legality of the cars kind of coming through, besides the Alpine issues, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But what preseason really means as like a precursor, gives teams to see what they need to do, which I think is the biggest one. We talked about the Flovis spray and everything about that.
All those aero rakes. You know, it really, you want to see the effect of all your wind tunnel testing and all of that engineering that you've done over the winter months. See how that works on track, because the wind tunnel is not the same conditions as the track. It's the closest you're going to get to a track test in the off season, because you can't do track tests in the off season. But yeah, it's 27 hours to get as much on-track data as you can to improve little parts of your car that you couldn't fully test to the maximum in your wind tunnel and in the factory and the facilities that you have at base.
One reason because of that is because the wind tunnel speeds are maxed out at 180 miles per hour. So this is something that Haas did a lot, but they would just kind of limit the car's speed to about 200 miles per hour on straights just for them to get more data and compare the points of data from the wind tunnel to see if it's doing better at high speeds or not.
Yeah, see how accurate it is, the wind tunnel data. That's very, very cool that you said that. I think that's a very notable piece that I didn't even pick up on while I was watching.
I saw a whole video on it, and it was very, very fascinating, and I wanted to talk about it. So, although preseason gives us a great look into how these cars and teams do for the year, I mean, look at two teams off the top five last year, McLaren and Aston Martin. Both kind of in opposite situations as they are in this year, but each car is doing better and will do better, hopefully, unless you're Aston Martin last year. But, I mean, they didn't do well at Bahrain testing, but that's not to say that these cars aren't good, because one thing about this is only on one track, and not all the cars are made for specific tracks. Some of them like to go for a little bit more like high corner speed versus more straight line speed. So,
like, just because your favorite team had a bad preseason testing, let's say if you're Alpine, my God, were they horrible? Just because they had a bad preseason testing does not mean that is how they are going to sit for the entire year. Raven put it out perfectly. You have to think about somebody like McLaren. Last year, they were close to the very bottom in preseason testing, and they ended the season as the second best car on the grid. You had Aston Martin on the flip side, who came into preseason testing. They were arguably the second best car compared to Red Bull at preseason testing, and they spent the entire year dropping off from that. So, don't think Red Bull are okay. Red Bull doesn't count. Let's just say don't say Ferrari is in a great place. They're sitting pretty in second. That's how they're going to look all year. Ferrari could very well fall off. Red Bull can't, because they're Red Bull. And you know, somebody like Haas, they're still going to have their good tracks. You got to think about Nico Hülkenberg putting it P2 last year at Canada. Like, those moments are still possible on merit. It just depends on the track you're racing at.
Well, I think it's time to start focusing on next year's world championship, because Max was smiling to the media, which doesn't happen that often, but
yes, he also was saying, laser focused.
Yeah, he was saying that the car does everything that he wants it to do, which, good for him. I wish other teams could say the same and that there could be a little bit more competition, but Alonso also was quoted saying that 19 drivers know that they aren't winning the world championship, and my point to that is thank you, James Hunt, for the outstanding analysis.
Yeah, dude, there was also another great clip. Max was talking to GP on the radio, and he came over telling GP that the car feels better than last year, and GP came back saying, oh, you know what that means, and Max just started laughing on the radio.
It's maniacal.
It's so depressing.
It's bad, but good at the same time, I guess. V-Carb, let's give you a little bit of a round of applause there. Congratulations to them. Absolutely outstanding at preseason testing. Car did way better. Danny Ric with fourth fastest time on day one, I believe.
Yep.
And yeah, I think, call me crazy, and Oliver, I think you already did, but they have a chance at some podiums or even a sneaky win if conditions are right and they play their cards right. So
yeah, sneaky win is a crazy take, but I'll definitely agree with the podiums. They really shocked me. I think they are close to being on par with a team like Aston Martin. I don't see them having a season like a Ferrari, a McLaren, or a Mercedes, but I definitely see a mid-table finish. Them potentially even fighting for fifth in the championship if Aston Martin has another fall-off type season like they did last year. Now, one more thing about preseason testing I want to say. You know, you had some team like V-Carb do really well, and then you had a team like Alpine, who arguably, besides maybe Haas and Stake, look like the worst team on the grid. Like, I don't know how much y'all watched, but Alpine looked horrible in testing.
Overweight, too.
Overweight, black car, you know, race pace, they are bottom of the grid besides Williams and Haas. Yeah, they're bottom three in race pace. In qualifying pace, I believe they're only seventh. And, you know, last year they were kind of in no man's land. They weren't fighting in the midfield. They weren't backmarkers. They look to have fallen more into that back marker category this year. And I've heard that a lot of their engineers and personnel are looking for opportunities to leave the team now because that team is going nowhere. I know when they rejoined the sport in 2016, they had this whole 100 race plan for how they were going to be fighting at the front of the grid. And it really feels like since Daniel Ricciardo and Cyril left in 2019, that team has just fallen apart. 2020, my apologies, 2020.
Let's go to the reserves, and then we'll end it off with some Drive to Survive talk. But reserves this year, we have Liam Lawson for both V-Carb and Red Bull. I have a question about that, which we'll talk about at the end.
We can knock it out right now.
Let's go for it.
What happens if they both get hurt? Let's say Sergio Perez and Daniel Ricciardo both break both their wrists. I think Liam Lawson drives for Red Bull, and V-Carb recruits somebody like Jake Dennis, who tested with F1 during the, or he did an FP1 session in Abu Dhabi. Very notable Formula E racer, was part of Red Bull's junior program. I feel like they bring somebody in from a different discretion of racing. I don't see them bringing up a young junior again. So that's that one. Knocked out. Keep going, Raven. I did not mean to
No, you're all good.
Interject.
For Mercedes, we have Frederick Vesti and Mick Schumacher.
Beautiful.
For Ferrari, we have three. We got Oliver Bearman, Antonio Giovinazzi, and Robert Schwartzman. Aston Martin, they have their legend, Felipe Drugovich.
Yep.
McLaren, Ryo Hirakawa, and Patty O'Ward.
For those of you that don't know, Ryo Hirakawa is a WEC driver for Toyota Gazoo.
Well, that's cool. I like seeing WEC drivers go to F1. That's a cool jump in discretion of racing. Alpine, they have their boy Jack Doohan.
Jack Doohan.
Sauber, I'm not calling them Stake F1. I refuse to.
I think we should go with just Sauber, yeah.
Theo Porcher and Zane Maloney. And Haas, they have Pietro Fittipaldi and Oliver Bearman as well, because they are a Ferrari junior team. People forget
essentially
that.
Yeah.
Alex Albon. In
what
an
I will
interview.
Say,
oh,
Williams has not confirmed their reserve driver yet.
That's true. That's kind of why I skipped them.
But what I will say is, I think they go for somebody in their junior program, that being Zach O'Sullivan or Franco Colapinto, both racing in F2 this year, both finished in the top five of the F3 championship last year. If Alex Albon or Logan Sargeant get hurt, I expect one of those two to be getting their chance. Yeah. Sorry for interrupting you.
No, you're all good. Alex Albon in an interview said that everyone did the T-pose that George Russell did for the introduction. So
oh,
I will
yes.
be searching online to see if I can find those anywhere, but I doubt it. I assume that they're all locked away in a vault. But
we're getting the code for that soon.
Let's end this pod today with some Drive to Survive talk. Drive to Survive dropped season 6 on, what was it, Wednesday?
Friday?
Whatever the 23rd was. Yeah, Friday the 23rd. 10 episodes. I have watched through 2.
I know, personally have not seen any of it yet.
I know people who have finished it as well. So we're going to go with the first point, the smaller point. As a film major, this show really pisses me off. And I feel like not only film majors can relate to this, but also diehard fans of the sport can agree with this point. But I absolutely hate the splicing of audio across the season to tell a storyline for one episode. It is annoying. Just make stories that aren't there. It makes drivers look like they're caring more than they actually are.
It makes some drivers look like bigger jerks than they actually are.
It's
a lot of taking it out of context and restructuring, which if you're somebody who pays attention, you'll notice those nuances, and it will be kind of aggravating to see.
Yeah. I mean, besides the pleasing car shots and the insider looks on races and race days and some of that, this show isn't really that good. This show has definitely gotten worse over the years, and
yeah,
I've only seen 2 episodes, and I'll keep watching, but every single episode has moments where I'm like, this just is there for the show.
And Drive to Survive's best season was season one.
Because
that's all I have to say.
Because it was new and they didn't have pressure.
And a lot of people didn't know enough about the sport yet.
You could do a lot more. The other thing, which I know I'm not alone on reading opinions online, but I'm all for having a prominent woman figure to tell the story of Drive to Survive. I think that's an awesome idea. There's plenty of women in F1 who are A, suitable, B, experienced enough either behind an F1 kind of car or have been in the sport as a journalist,
engineer,
or just team principal, or like, not team principal.
Team principal,
like,
Claire Williams at Williams.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know why you have Danica Patrick, an Indian NASCAR driver, trying to tell stories of F1 drivers. I think it's cool that you're getting a prominent woman. Why Danica Patrick?
Dude, get somebody like Jamie Chadwick or
any Formula One
like
Academy
that.
Driver. Any of them. You could get the whole panel of them to tell the story.
Because
they know
agree.
More about what's happening inside the teams than Danica Patrick does.
Danica Patrick is a fan. She's a fan.
She's not an insider, and it's so frustrating because there's so many people that are deserving of that opportunity and aren't getting it just because she already has this reputation in an American racing, and B,
let's also forget her on-track record in the United States is awful.
Yeah, I mean, there's clips of like all the NASCAR drivers being
crash
like,
compilation.
Oh, it's you know, you have to congratulate her for getting to the highest sport and competing with men. Yes, she is very good. She's very, very, very talented. Just get a Formula One driver to talk about Formula One stuff. If we did a NASCAR series or a Formula, like IndyCar series, that would be really cool. She would have a lot of insight that we could use. But because she never drove an F1, the only thing that she can do is compare IndyCar to F1, which
It's like
is
having,
impossible.
It's like having Kyle Larson come on and talk about... Kyle Larson, that's not the right name.
Well, there's Joey Lovato, too, whatever his name is.
Yeah. No, Kyle Larson, the NASCAR driver.
Yeah.
Coming on and like talking about F1. It's not even like it's not even a male and female thing. It's just somebody who's not involved in F1 to the extent that some of these other people are. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Joey Logano was the driver that I was just talking about. But
yes.
Him and the two Red Bull drivers did a sit down because they're all partnered by Shell.
Mm-hmm.
They all did a sit down and kind of had the drivers just kind of go back and forth. I think this was 2 weeks ago. I talked about it a little bit on the podcast, but it's really cool just to see these guys talk about their discretion of motorsport to each other.
Yeah.
Because the look of Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc's face when they're like, oh yeah, we do like 300 to 500 laps.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
On an oval, and Charles Leclerc was like, yeah, by lap 50, I would be screaming just because I'm bored.
I'd be dead as well.
Yeah, I think it's just really cool, and it gives you a really good insight to the differences of these sports. But anything else for some F1 talk? Otherwise, we can get into the other discretions and then wrap it up.
I have nothing else about F1, but I'm definitely interested in getting into some WEC rally and MotoGP, something we have not talked about on the podcast quite yet.
Yeah. WEC testing is concluding by the time that this episode has gone up. I haven't really watched any of that, but I'm very excited to watch the Bahrain Qatar event on March 2nd. That will be it for WEC.
I'm so ready to see some endurance racing. It's anything to get me prepared for Le Mans. That was probably one of my favorite motor racing events of all last year. Like, oh, so good.
For World Rally Car, we got about a month until Kenya, which is one of the more exciting events just because it's in the desert like Australia. So it's a fun change of scenery, and the track is a really, really cool track. So
yeah, look
up
the highlights for
that
last year. We were watching them yesterday or the day before. It is a really cool looking circuit.
MotoGP is on our last points. They have been doing testing on and off for the last 4 weeks at different tracks. first race, I believe, is next week. So we'll kind of dive into that at the end of next week's episode. But next week, we will also have video coming out on our YouTube channel, Aletheia Network Media, I believe it is. Otherwise, it's just Aletheia Media. Yeah, check that out. That's going to be really, really fun. I think we're all excited for racing to actually be happening again. I know Oliver is.
I'm locked in, baby. I'll be watching this first race on vacation this week, and I can't wait to just get back here in the studio and discuss a beautiful race recap.
It's going to be so much fun. But until next time, everyone, have an outstanding rest of your Monday day and rest of the week. We will see you next Sunday.
Enjoy the race this Saturday.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Take care.